Welcome to the first episode of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Eastrick.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
And we're here today recording our very first episode of this podcast in the Tole Lege, or Tole Lege Coffee House in Greenwood Village, Colorado, which happens to be, the coffee house happens to be situated inside the Augustan Institute.
It sounds so august. So it sounds like we should just have, yes, for the listener, we have brick walls everywhere with ivy growing on them. Everyone is wearing tweed with patches on their elbows.
Right. And all of the chairs are covered in gold plate.
And leather.
Yes. Lots of
it's
leather.
It's an institute.
Yes.
It's a leather and brick and ivy.
And there are
institute.
Lots of old books everywhere. So the point of this is to explain to you what the Over the Counter podcast is, who we are, and what exactly we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll go first. My name is Mark Eastcheck. I am a professor here at the Augustan Institute. I teach scripture, and when I get the chance, I like to teach biblical languages as well, Greek and Hebrew. And I don't know. So I met Andrew here in the Tole Lege Coffee House, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So what about you, Andrew?
I am Andrew Whaley. I am a coffee consultant by trade. And no, that is not like sanitation engineer for janitor or, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm a barista. I am a barista, proudly, and have been so for 23 years. But I am a business consultant that specializes in the coffee world. And my niche has kind of developed like church-based. You know, I'm the Catholic coffee consultant, so to speak, is what NCR called me. And I helped build this coffee house for this graduate school in theology. And while making coffee, I've met and built a relationship with and talented Dr.
So the way that this happened, right, the coffee house came to existence a year and a half ago when the Augustan Institute moved into this building. And I'm addicted to the bean, so I frequent the coffee house.
Addicted is such a bad word.
Well, attached?
It's like saying you're addicted to love, or were you Robert Palmer or something? That's such an old music
reference. I'm a user? No, that's also bad. I don't know.
You appreciate the good.
I'm a connoisseur.
You're a connoisseur.
Of the good of
an
coffee.
Enthusiastic participator in the cult of the
bean. You could think of Andrew as kind of like my supplier.
I am. Daddy loves his little junkies.
Anyway, the point is, I come down to the coffee bar here at Tole Lege, and Andrew and I start talking, and sometimes it takes a while for us to finish talking. And we decided that we have really interesting conversations, and that every once in a while we ought to record them. So that's basically what we're doing. We're drinking some coffee.
Right.
We're sitting in the coffee bar, and we're talking about the things we like to talk about.
Yeah, so basically, episode one is actually like episode 100 of the Over the Counter podcast.
It's true. It's just there was no microphone.
Yeah, we were already having these conversations. So like, why don't we record? People were literally told us that they liked sitting and listening to us talk. So we're like, well, maybe other people might. So I think that this is important. This is so many podcasts and so many radio shows and stuff are so heavily contrived. And this one, I can honestly say, is this really developed organically. We would probably be having this conversation, maybe a slightly less focused, less disciplined, less topical version of it, regardless of whether the mic was on. Maybe not at this time and this day, but we do this all the time. And this over time, a penchant for this kind of reality, a love for reality and a love for truth and seeing interesting aspects of reality across the spectrum of the real, not just in philosophy and theology, and just even the deep, deep kind of architectonic principles and ideas that underlie even the most mundane things kind of became the things that we talk about. And so it evolved, you know, into this. This is just the next step, right?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
I think so. You just used some really big words that confused me, but I think I understood.
You already have a doctorate in theology. Come on. Okay, so maybe we should talk about... That'd be a good time to figure out, talk about kind of who we are. Okay, so...
Well, I can describe Andrew for you.
Okay, go ahead and describe me.
Andrew has a beard.
I do.
And he loves coffee, and he loves to feed people. He's kind of like the male version of your Italian grandmother in that way.
You have to mention this amazing hat.
I don't even know how to describe it. Is it like a cabbie hat?
It's like
a gray cabbie hat with a braided silver doodad across the front.
It's a Greek fisherman's cap.
Okay, whatever.
It's a real handmade wool Greek fisherman's cap that I found in a thrift store over the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it.
It's nice. It's in good condition, too.
I think this is going to be like my new signature hat.
So Andrew likes to talk to all the people that come to the coffee bar. But he doesn't carry on your typical coffee bar conversation about the weather or politics. But usually things get a little bit more interesting than that in terms of, philosophy, I don't know, gluten-freeness. All sorts of other interesting topics come up at the coffee bar. And let's see, what else? Well, you often hear Andrew quoting Plato, for example. That seems to have really dominated his life in a lot of ways.
Since his going to
Thomas Aquinas College. Got to name drop that.
Right? Yeah, we got to get a prop. Yeah, we got to get it. We got to get props to the TAC.
Yeah, so if you sit at the coffee bar long enough, you're going to get some percentage of a Thomas Aquinas College education. From Andrew Whaley.
That's assuming that I got one in the first place.
Yeah, well, I think you did. Is that an okay description?
Yeah, okay. I mean, basically, I'm a guy that is in the business world, but I got into the coffee thing because I love ideas and I love sitting around drinking coffee. And I studied philosophy in the secular university, in a public university, Southeast Missouri State. And then I ended up going to a great book school and reading everything from Homer to Einstein. And tons of Plato and Aristotle and all that stuff. And so I kind of think philosophically about the world. But I like to think about a lot of things that people who like philosophy wouldn't think about.
I like to think of Andrew as a modern-day Socrates disguised as a barista. You know, going around asking people annoying questions like, why is there something rather than nothing? His favorite question.
It is totally my favorite question.
Harassing the poor youth of Athens.
We should buy billboards that say, why is there something rather than nothing? No URL, no nothing. The church should literally put that billboard everywhere because no one wants to think about that.
Well, it seems like that would be a better use of our advertising money than, remember those billboards a few years ago advertising the end of the world on a particular day? Yeah, it seems like a kind of waste.
Or EWTN. Oh, did he say that? Ah, that was bad.
Yeah, you shouldn't have said that.
I'm a bad person.
49 lashes with a wet noodle.
So, okay, Mark. Mark Gieschek. Mark looks exactly like you think he does. He is a scripture scholar. He has a beard, glasses, he wears suits.
The beard is really just since Christmas. It's a very temporary thing.
But, I mean, he wears a bow tie sometimes. We wore one today, too. He's a very staid... Very conservative.
I wore a bow tie just for you, Andrew.
I appreciate that. He's a family man. He's very conservative. He's a very subtle, very cultured human being. So he's kind of the opposite of me in that sense. You know, I'm kind of nuts and kind of crazy, and I'm just hoping I can get through the. I'm hoping we can get these podcasts. I'll end up worked up, and I'm just hoping I don't cuss at any point too bad. So Mark is the really good Catholic family guy that teaches scripture. I'm this crazy guy that's single and 43 and I go to see bands and stuff.
I view myself as the left brain portion of this relationship.
That is certainly true.
And Andrew is the right brain portion. So he's the secret genius and I'm merely the linguistic mode kind of categorizing things and making sure they're within their proper boundaries.
Oh, I'm the gestalt. You're the broad brushstroke.
Yeah, all these big words are really confusing to me.
We should publish a glossary with every podcast.
Of Andrew Whaley's vocabulary?
Just all my isms and all my Whaley-isms, because I say...
So I don't get to use big words, is what you're saying.
You can use all of them you want. See, whatever we say, that we go back and we think, wow... We use some big words in this one.
Okay, so
I like big words, though.
One of the things we need to talk about, Andrew, though, is what we're actually trying to do with this podcast.
What are we trying to do with this
podcast? I am a fan of action in general. I do believe that doing something is better than doing nothing for the most part. But why are we doing this thing, I think, is the question that should be on our minds right now. And I have a few ideas of my own as to what we're doing.
we're probably doing these for completely – we probably have completely different visions.
No, I think
– let's get the left brain take on this, and then I'll tell you why I'm
– Look, I think that there is a space, a need out there for a kind of commentary, media commentary, that is a little bit different than your usual commentary. And what I mean by this – is that a commentary that's a little bit deeper, a little bit more informed philosophically, and yet also a little bit wider in scope. I have a feeling that a lot of whether it be radio programs or television shows or whatever, are very narrow in scope, right? They only talk about one particular subject area, whether it be sports or politics or religion or whatever. And I think what's beautiful about what we can do here in the context of this podcast is that we can have a broader scope, right? A wider scope of topics, and we can look at just a kind of wide array of things, whether it be in culture or in religion or in politics or in music or in sports or in just daily interaction, that I think that's really where we can excel and offer a kind of unique contribution in this podcast.
Yeah, I think we agree a lot in the sense that I think that before a conversation with Mark, before a conversation, just before any of that, I love conversation. If I won the lottery, I would build my life around interesting conversations with people I want to talk to. And that might be the mailman. It might be the founder of some institute somewhere. It might be a philosopher. It might be the guy that sells me my groceries. You know, I just love perspectives and ideas, right? And I think that there's depth and really interesting things to think about across the board in reality. And we're going to talk about some stuff that, we'll put it this way, we're going to hit topics, talk about them kind of from a natural philosophical perspective for the most part. I mean, we'll probably delve into theology sometimes, but for the most part, we're going to be staying on a fairly philosophical, natural level. But we're going to talk about stuff that you're never going to hear on kind of typical quote-unquote Catholic media or something. It's just not going to happen.
Well, you know, I think one of the other things that's great about radio and podcasts as a medium is I think they're more true to reality. So one of the things you learn if you study pedagogy, right, throughout Western history.
That was a huge word.
Pedagogy?
Yeah, that's a big word.
That's not a big word. If you study pedagogy, right, about teaching in Western culture, you'll quickly come to see that the great teachers prefer live voice, viva voce, interaction, over writing. And that writing, books and articles and things like that, is a sort of secondary form of intellectual discourse. The primary form of intellectual discourse is verbal, or should I say oral.
Mm-hmm.
Not just wordy, but having to do with talking, and that I think is something that's been really lost, right? In our day and age, which is so weird because there are so many ways in which we can engage in intellectual discourse,
right,
with the internet and media and radio and whatever that we're not taking advantage of because we have come to prioritize the written word over the spoken word, which is ridiculous.
I would just like to point out that the guy that's not from Thomas Aquinas College was the first person to use Latin on this podcast. So stereotypes.
You used German, though. You said Gestalt. Gestalt.
I did use German. How do you speak German? I'm not even sure I know what Gestalt means. I just have kind of a Gestalt about what Gestalt. Oh, never mind. I do have a Gestalt about what Gestalt means. I know it when I see it. It's like irony.
What's the spirit of the times? What's that called?
Oh, the Zeitgeist.
The Zeitgeist, yeah. That's an overused Germanism.
I like the word Zeitgeist, though.
It just sounds cool.
And it's the worst Smashing Pumpkins album, too. I can't stand that album.
But. Okay, now this is an area into which I have no ability.
Yeah, there's the other thing that's like the right brain, left brain. Okay, Mark sits around listening to like very highbrow classical music, and
I do.
Don't you even like jazz and stuff?
I don't know. No. Well, I like jazz.
You don't listen to like pop music for the most part.
No,
right?
I don't. But I mean, my wife is the true connoisseur. I'm not.
I, on the other hand, came this close. If you can see, my fingers are roughly 3 centimeters apart. I came this close to dropping $70 on StubHub last night at the last minute to go see the Pixies at the Fillmore because the Pixies are on a reunion tour, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. So I grew up playing like drums in a punk band off and on and owning skateboard shops.
Have you heard of this? I just found this like yesterday. Five Iron Frenzy got back together.
Really?
Yes. Were you ever into the whole ska thing? Way back when?
I like Supertones.
I was into that for about 10 minutes
and actually
yeah. Buck. I have a friend who was in Buck.
I was kind of friends with a couple of guys. I've hung out with Five Iron Friends. Let's say that.
Okay, so they're here in Denver,
right?
They always have been,
right? And so, I'm not from here.
So they did a Kickstarter campaign and to do a new album. They finally released the album in November of 2013. I just found that out yesterday.
Dude, I want to hear.
But you know what's weird about it? One of them is not Christian anymore. He's an atheist. So it's kind of like it's just a little strange.
Well, they were kind of always. I mean.
They were never hyper-religious.
They were always kind of like...
It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines...
Jeff the Girl is a youth pastor.
At
a church here in Denver.
I have a friend of mine who had
Jeff the Girl is the girl in Five Iron Frenzy.
And I have a friend who had a massive crush on...
Which is a ska band.
Ska
was a form of music that was popular right around the late 90s, early 2000s, right?
Well,
it's basically sort of like rock with horns swings.
It was like which version of ska? I mean, the first wave of ska was the stuff that kind of was the precursor to reggae. Reggae is the original kind of like progenitor of it. And then the second wave of ska was, you know, like the Toasters and the Specials and like all that stuff. It was a very much kind of a working class movement. A lot of in London a lot, but it's like upbeats and it's, you know, very kind of kind of bouncy and it was rock with horns in it. Yeah. And then by the time Five Iron Frenzy came around, you know, it was kind of like harder indie rock with horns, but it still kind of had that upstroke, kind of upbeat, kind of reggae kind of thing going in it. Yeah. So if Jim Laurent is listening to this podcast, then he's going to laugh because I tease him constantly because he was a giant.
Where did you even get this topic from?
He was giant.
You were telling me about how you were going to spend money on a ticket
to see the Pixies. No. I said that you were all into like classical music and stuff, and I said that I played drums in a punk band back in the day, and that I, you know, play. I go to indie rock shows, and that's how you got on this.
Did you know that I play bass?
No,
did I ever tell you this? Yeah, so in high school I played double bass.
Double bass.
Yeah, I still have it in my living room.
That is so awesome. I have got to see that.
Okay, but this is interesting. That my high school had the best high school orchestra in the state of Michigan. And so it was just a fantastic group to be part of. I was always at the very end of the bass section. We had 10 basses, if you can imagine, in a high school orchestra.
Okay, you played double bass in
high school.
Oh, okay. You mean like the big stage? Oh, I thought. Okay, this is.
You thought I meant like a heavy metal bass with two necks?
I thought you meant like a bass.
Nobody
like
has a bass with two necks. They have guitars with two necks. You can have 6 strings on one neck and 12 strings on the other. I actually have a 12-string guitar, too. But and I did play electric bass. So I have both an electric and a string.
So there you
bass.
Go. So he played in an orchestra. I, on the other hand, started playing drums when I was like 11, 12 maybe. And I really wanted, my hero was Neil Peart from Rush. And I wanted to play, I wanted to be a percussionist, right? I wanted to like, you know, play all that jazz stuff, all the really complicated rhythms. And I wasn't very good at that.
Jazz drumming is very interesting.
It's super interesting, right? And so I was trying to do that and I wasn't very good at it. And let's face it, by that time I'm 13, 14, all I'm really interested in is girls, right? So then at some point I played some little gig with a friend of mine's band, and I just was playing, we were playing rock music covers and just boom snick, right? And afterwards, girls came and talked to me and were interested in me because I was the guy that played the drums. I basically gave up on jazz at that point and played only rock music because I found, you know, the jazz guys didn't get chicks, but the guy with the boom snick got chicks, you know. And face it, when you're in high school, That's all you're interested in is girls, right? Mark's looking at me like the lights are on, no one's home. See, he's the left brain, and he's like the good guy. I'm the right brain with the shady past. So.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay, so what else are we going to do with this podcast?
Okay, well, I think we're going to...
I mean, what are some possible topics we might talk about?
Well, I mean, we've already talked about a couple of the next two, hopefully, are going to be the idea of narrative in one's life, looking at your life through the lens of story and how that's a character that unfolds over time, kind of a literary, the literary lens as kind of a hermeneutic for looking at your actual life and people's lives, in you know, and try to find meaning. And then we're going to talk about uniforms as either maskers or revealers of identity in societies. We did that Scratch podcast that we might revisit sometime. On restaurants and the different forms they take historically and in different places. That was really interesting. I wouldn't mind revisiting that. That was really interesting. And then what was the last one we were going to get to? Oh, we were talking about the concept of free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and about
this
and,
is huge.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do several podcasts on this, about the idea that things can be made out of ones and zeros, which I've been told they're not made out of ones and zeros anymore. But, you know, things can be digitized now, so things that are used to be physical goods are more like spiritual goods or intellectual goods now. And it's that they can be shared, they can be given away without diminishing,
yeah.
And we can act at a distance like angels do or something by using... You know,
okay, so this just brings up...
So those are good examples of weird crap we're going to talk about, you know?
I just wanted to tell you one example of that I just thought was really fascinating. So there's this one online marketer guy who, you know, is one of those people that writes these ebooks that aren't very thick and then sells them for gazillions of dollars.
Which we should do.
Well, yeah, maybe. So he wrote...
How to Build a Podcast About Nothing and Make Millions of Dollars.
He wrote an ebook, and he was planning on selling it for $1,000 a copy. And, you know, selling, I don't know, however many copies and making a lot of money off of it. And he had a calculation that I think he was going to make about $1 million doing this. Maybe sell about 1,000 copies, right? However, somehow he got in touch with a publisher. A publisher got in touch with him and said, you know, we really want to publish your book as a book, mm-hmm. a book. So he said, okay. So they published his book, sold it for, you know, like $10 a copy. And he made 10 times as much money. Fascinating.
But physical books?
Yeah. So, but this was maybe back in 2005 or so. This is a while ago. But it's just fascinating to think about how, depending on what exactly you're trying to accomplish, you know, different forms of media can work.
I've been thinking about that a lot because I just wrote a book and I'm finishing it now. And I'm trying to decide whether I want to self-publish it, if I want to go completely digital, if I want to take it to traditional publishing. Yeah. So I'm probably going to do all the above and see what happens.
Well, and but, we'll just have to explore the digital format a lot, because I think it's a really fascinating cultural topic that is normally talked about only from a sort of technical perspective,
right.
Not from a cultural one. And I think there are a lot of open questions that really need to be answered about digital economy, digital life, all that kind of stuff. That just
right. No, I think that's definitely worth talking about.
I mean, like, can you pray the breviary on your phone?
I do.
You know what I mean? That's just a weird idea.
I mean, it's weird for me, and I don't like it. I prefer to have my old leather breviary inside its case with a zipper.
Is it just a
shift in technology? But carrying that around is so... I tell you, the real middle ground, though, is when you can have, like, an iPad. When you've got something that's big and it's the size...
I think the real middle ground is the e-ink readers, right, that aren't LCD screens, that don't light up your face when you turn them on.
Yeah, I've got the Kindle Paperwhite.
Yeah.
And I like it, but... I don't know. There's something about it's slow. Well, maybe without reading, they haven't published. You know, they haven't published a breviary on Kindle. You have to use the browser and kind of like save it. It's stupid.
Ridiculous.
Someone should put the actual breviary with the Grail Psalms.
And it's out always on, copyright things, and that's another problem.
We'll right, divine intimacy is another one of those. Perfect for the e-reader.
Yeah.
And it's not because of some copyright issue that you don't have it on there. So, so there's the kind of thing that we're talking. So far, we just covered the philosophy. We were talking about the ontology of angels and how being able to have tech support from a distance is similar. We've got to the interaction of reading the prayers that monks pray and people pray all over the world, the Liturgy of the Hours, and which technology is most fitting for that.
Look, but I think there are a lot of
other... That's the kind of stuff...
There are other fruitful topics we can talk about.
Like
one of the things I'm interested in is original art, especially in the home.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that.
And how original art isn't being produced as much as it used to be because there's so many easy ways to copy things. I don't know. There's just a lot of topics.
That would lead into music.
Sure, we got
to
talk about
music. It's funny, I was talking to our mutual friend Perry that works here today. He's a musician, really great lyricist, incredible kind of indie folk musician. And a friend of ours had asked him for a tape or for like a CD or something, you know, that because he's recorded a couple of songs. And he keeps putting her off, saying no. And I asked him why. He goes, well, yeah, because now they have to come to my show and listen to me, or I have an excuse to go over to their house and play music for them. Because that's the only way they can hear me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's actually kind of funny. It's like, once you distribute that cognition, once you distribute that kind of,
right.
You capture that experience, someone can have that experience of you without you.
Right.
Which is good if you're trying to sell a bunch of records, but if relationship and physical human presence is part of what you want out of playing music, then it fights against that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Maybe there's going to be people, maybe there are people who play music but refuse to record right now.
No, actually, I've really thought about this. I think that there's eventually going to be an anti-digital movement, and I think that's going to be part of it, right? That's going to emphasize presence over what would be called digital stuff.
Well, that's already kind of happening to a certain extent, like kind of this throwback, the kind of the hipster kind of fetishization of the authentic. So it's like that kind of started in the 90s with kind of but like return to vinyl and the warm sound of analog
that's
recording.
Not what I'm talking about.
And
that's
stuff
not what
like
I'm talking
that.
About. I'm talking about emphasizing real presence with real people over any form of media. Okay, so not prioritizing old media styles over new media styles, but prioritizing things like live music, real art, right, rather than pictures or photographs or digital things.
Nice, yeah.
That kind of thing. Like having people paint your portrait. I mean, I just feel like there's going to be, at some point, a movement in that direction. And I'm not saying it's going to be a whole culture, but like a subcultural kind of movement. Right. And I think it's going to be really important. There already is this thing that's been around since before the internet called the Lead Pencil Club. It's based in New England. And
really?
And there are people that have like eschewed the whole digital world and computers and whatever. And they write letters to each other in lead pencil. It's obviously very anachronistic and tongue-in-cheek and whatever else.
Right.
But I'm thinking of something like that on a much bigger scale.
Yeah.
That is more serious.
But that being said, you know, it's like I think that there's room for everything in the sense that I love writing. But I write differently when I write longhand in my journal or with a decent pen. And I write differently if I'm just using a pen and a legal pad. And
that's,
it's not going to be...
That's the whole right brain, left brain thing.
But then
we'll talk about that too.
But then also the difference between writing on my... typing on a word processor on your laptop,
mm-hmm.
and typing on an analog... typewriter. You see people like typing
yes.
on typewriters.
We'll talk about keyboards.
There's a coffee house bakery here in Denver, and I saw this the other day, and it's Sugar Bake Shop on South Broadway, and they have a typewriter. This is a great idea. I'm going to steal this one these days. They have a typewriter, an old school typewriter, on a shelf that's like a type height if you're standing, and you can type something, and then cut off the little thing that you typed, and then there's a place to like pin it up on the wall right in front. So like while you're waiting in line, you can write a little poem, like, and you can hear the little click, jing, jing, and like when you return, and then you can pull it out, cut it, and you can stick it there, and you can read what other people wrote. And there's something about the tactile nature of that. And I just can't, I cannot, I've tried to get my journals over into digital. I've tried to start doing that more. And I have to write on paper, and here's the over the counter hack for the week. We're gonna give you, maybe we'll give you a hack every week. This hack is this is great, right? You take you know those little G2 Pilot pens. They like Pilot makes this little pen called G2. They're like blue or black, and you can see through them. Yeah, if you take any, they make a nicer one called the G2 Limited, right? And it's got a metal shaft, and it feels good. It's bigger, right? Well, if you get the Mont Blanc rollerball refills, like the refills for those $300 like super nice pens, and you clip that little piece of blue plastic off the end, it fits in the cheaper pen.
Huh.
So I use, that's all I use. That's what I write with all the time. So, cause it writes like butter. It writes like a Montblanc pen, right? So that combined with the paper, like in a Moleskine journal, I just, it brings out of me a certain style of writing. And I tell you what was interesting.
Okay, okay. Well, I think we're toward the end here. I think.
Okay, well, come on. We got a little bit.
No, we've got 8 seconds.
So well, we can go over, can't we?
All right. Okay, but only a few seconds.
Okay. At one point in my life, a friend of mine went into the convent. And she wasn't allowed to call or write email. So we started doing these longhand letters like you're talking about, right? Uh-huh. And I noticed that my letters to her kind of took on a much deeper, much more introspective kind of tone because I was writing to her in the physical manner that I write in my journal. And the only other time I write like that, longhand on decent paper, is in my journal. And it actually colored the type of conversation and the topics we covered as we wrote by the way I was writing, because physically how I was writing. And I think that this goes back full circle to why we're doing this. The oral communication as primary, or the handwritten, kind of, these different modes of conversation elicit different types of topics, right? Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I think that we're going to have to draw our initial podcast to a close.
Okay, they're going to get more interesting than this. This was just kind of like us giving you a little taste.
This is just to whet your appetite for what's going to happen later on.
Yeah, we're going to be on a little more on topic.
We are planning on putting this thing up and doing one a week, and it'll all be about between about 25 and 30 minutes, and we hope to hear you, or rather see you, or watch you download many episodes of this
podcast. Can't actually see you while you're downloading, so don't worry about that. We are not Santa Claus. We don't know when you're awake or if you've been bad or good. We can't actually see you.
All right. So that's it for
episode 1. Where can they find this at? Do we know where they're?
Oh, well, yeah. Right now, it's at overthecounter1.podbean.com.
But hopefully, we'll soon get a URL like overthecounterpodcast.com or OTC podcast. We'll find something. We'll come up with something.
All right, great. So until next time, this is Mark and Andrew signing off.
See you later. Bye.